Hey, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 152 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. As you know, we are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, where we talk all things solo Beatles. And I just happen to have a special guest here that's one of my co-hosts for that show, but we'll get to her in 1 second. First, I want to introduce to you my co-host, my partner in crime, my backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on, my friend?
Ah, good to be back here for the first show of the year of 2022.
That's right.
I'm doing well, partner, and welcome back.
Yes, welcome back indeed. Good to see you. I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas and New Year's out there. And like I said, it's good to be back. And today's episode, we are talking about this baby, Twin Freaks.
Yes, indeed.
And we brought a friend in here to talk about it. It was many years ago we first had her, as she was our very first guest here, back when my cousin was working the show with me, and that is the lovely Kit O'Toole. And we all know Kit. She's the author of Songs We Were Singing right there. She was the editor, co-editor of this one right here, Phantom and the Beatles, with our good friend Ken Womack. She's my co-host on Talk More Talk. I can't believe this is happening. This is just amazing that she's part of that show with myself, Ken Michaels, and Joe Mayo, and the part-timer Ken Womack.
very, very part-timer.
That's right. But she's also a contributing editor to Beatle Fan Magazine, and she is the wonderful, the ever-popular, the ever-busy Kit O'Toole. Kit, how we doing?
I'm doing great. Andy, Tom, so glad to be back. Always fun to be on here with you guys.
Yes.
And yes, I do have that distinct honor of being your first ever guest.
First ever guest and first guest of 2022.
I know. It all comes full circle, right?
That's right.
Yes.
So glad to see you, Kits, as we had to work in us, you know, lyrics to a song somehow in the show, you know. But today, like I said, we're talking about Twin Freaks. Really, not much news to get to this week, but we're just going to jump right in and talk about the album. Before then, Kit, how was your holidays? Did you have a good Christmas and New Year?
Yeah, it was kind of busy, but it was good on the whole, and busy but kind of laid back as well, since COVID crashed the party like it did in 2020.
Right.
So we kind of stayed in, but got some good stuff. I finally got the James Brown set Star Time. I've been wanting to get that forever. So
really?
Finally got very that good for my collection.
It's funny you mentioned James Brown, because I was just watching the film from 1973 called Black Caesar, which mm-hmm. James Brown did the soundtrack for.
Yes.
And I'm going to pick that up, because the music throughout the, James Brown stuff was great throughout that movie. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. This box set is just incredible. Yeah. It's like the ultimate James Brown one. Also picked up the remastered version that came out, I don't know, a year or two ago, of Prince's Sign of the Times.
Very good.
I'm looking forward to listening to that, and I got some great music to listen to, great haul.
they just announced earlier December that they're going to be reissuing a bunch of early Prince records and CDs.
Great.
From the first one up to
CDs
up to
CDs too, huh?
And vinyl. Yep. CDs and vinyl.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. I mean, those early albums and CDs that have been out of print for a while now, so it'll be great to have them.
Absolutely. And I'm actually doing, Ken Womack has those Tuesday night record clubs.
Right.
And in February, I'm going to be doing Sign of the Times along with them. So I wanted to get an upgraded version, expanded version, so I'd be ready to go. So partially I wanted to get that for homework, but also
Right.
also
yeah.
Yeah, I still need to get that box set because there's just so much music on that Sign of the Times box set. Because, I mean, if you know the history, it wasn't Sign of the Times. I mean, it was another project, and then it was another project, and then it eventually became Sign of the Times. I mean, there was just so much music that he recorded leading up to that album.
Exactly.
You know, amazing stuff. So
yeah.
Yep. But yeah, we're here to talk about Twin Freaks by Twin Freaks and Kit. You know, you've been working with Beatle Fan Magazine for a while now. Just talk about starting with them and you know, how long you've been writing with them for now.
Oh my gosh, I've been writing for them since probably the mid-90s, I'd say 95, wow. 96, yeah, it goes back a ways, I started, you know, of course, I was just a subscriber to begin with. I loved being a fan, and it was, yep.
It was the only way to get your news.
That's right.
Man. That was it.
That was it, absolutely. When they came out with the announcement that, and it was, I'll never forget it, it was a special mailing that came out, that George, Paul, and Ringo had gone into the studio to record the new songs for the anthology project. I mean, it was huge, you know, and that they sent out a special mailing about it. And it was just, I mean, yeah, because of course, no internet, so that's how you found out. I mean, it was big stuff. So,
those issues of Beatle Fan back then were like, it was like holding gold, the information in those things.
That's
what they were. I remember I took copies to school with me. They were like my Bible. I'm like, this is my Beatle news. I got to read this.
I know. Exactly. Like everything stopped when you got your issue. Right.
Yes.
I mean, it was like, yeah. So it was sort of a dream of mine. Like, I want to write for Beatle Fan. You know, I mean, it was really my thing. So I saw my chance when Bill King, who, of course, is still had a sort of a call for writers item in an issue saying, you know, that there was, you know, since the internet was really starting to take off in the mid-90s, that there was this explosion of Beatles websites and that he wanted a columnist who would cover this. And by this time, I think I was working on my master's degree. I was, because that's when I was starting to really explore the internet. That's when I really first encountered it. And so I thought, this is my chance. And so I sent in in fact, Bill found recently the letter I sent him. He showed it. You know, sent me a copy recently.
That's funny.
It's hilarious. And so, you know, I said I had been really exploring the internet and all this stuff. So he said, okay, let's do an audition, write a column. And so I did. And I think there were like one or two other people who did. And I got the job. And I'm still writing it.
Wow.
All these years later, and it's really been kind of cool because I've gotten this front row seat to how Beatles sites and solo have developed over all these years on the internet, and even just from a technological standpoint. I write other stuff too.
Right.
In fact, for the latest issue, I wrote an article about George Harrison's legacy. You know, marking 20 years since he passed. So I've written things like that, and I've written opinion pieces. I've written all different things. So it's really, you know, it's been an honor, really, to be part of that magazine.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the internet back then, and just thinking about it and how slow it was. It was just, I was also how long some, you know, pictures take to load, you know, on websites and stuff like that. It was a
chore, and if you wanted information, you really needed to be patient.
When I've been on some younger people's podcasts that I've talked about it, it's like, no, you don't understand. I was doing some of those early ones, like, you know, when it was the dial-up days and everything, you could, you know, click on a link, go downstairs and make yourself a sandwich, back up, and it would still be loaded.
Maybe the page would have loaded.
And hoping that your parents didn't need the phone, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
If they picked it up, it was over, Johnny. Yeah, what the hell, man? I was on McCartney's site. I was trying to get this thing. What'd you do? Sorry. We all dealt with it.
That's right. The good old days.
Oh man, the struggle was real, boy.
It sure was.
Absolutely.
You guys remember the AOL Beetle message boards and all those things too?
Absolutely. Yep, the message boards and Wreck Beetles.
Wreck Beetles.
Yep. And I covered all that stuff.
Too funny. Well, anyways, let's get mention the Beetle fan, because I'm sure that was at that time for you coming into 2005 because of Twin Freaks, only being released in the UK in a physical format here on vinyl. There are a couple promotional CDs out there lingering somewhere for a pretty penny. But I would imagine for a lot of Beetle fans or McCartney fans, I mean, Beetle Fan Magazine was probably one of the few ways you would have known that was a McCartney release.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably how it came out, because, I mean, of course, the internet was, by 2005, was certainly flourishing, but, I mean, social media was not really a thing yet.
Right.
No, and
we were better for it, too.
Yeah, in some ways, yeah. And so, probably Beetle Fan broke that news, too. And the other thing, too, though, was it was interesting when Twin Freaks came along because, mashups at that time were really starting to become popular.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I was really into them at that time. There was a podcast that I listened to, and I'm blanking out on the name of it now. Radio Clash. That's what it was called. And I think I heard about that from Entertainment Weekly. I think I subscribed to that magazine at the time. And they, and even, podcasting was a fairly new thing. And they were, they had an article about these, podcasts that were really exciting. And they mentioned this Radio Clash because it was a podcast about mashups, and they would play like the latest ones. And so I was really, into that at that time. And so when Twin Freaks came out, it was right around that time when mashups were starting to show up on the internet.
Right. And to kind of tie into that point, I don't know if you had this in your notes, Tom, but I'm sure, Kit, you'll know that the mashup thing, Twin Freaks, predates the Beatles' Love album by about a year, which was the big, obviously the big mashup project. So, Twin Freaks is 05, the Beatles' Love. I mean, so the timeline here with the mashups, to your point, is, and that Paul's was out first, but it's funny now in stature, here we are 15 years later. It's really still kind of a very low-key release, It's a very, very low-key release, even for McCartney diehard fans. It really
I mean, it's more of a low-key release, I think, here in the States because we didn't get it. And plus, when he had Freelance Hellraiser, who was more well-known in the UK, also go out on tour with him, in 2004, he was more well known out there as well. I mean, he had a big hit, mashup hit than in Europe at the time than he did here. So, it made more sense that, that it was a bigger hit. I mean, if it was, I don't even think it charted though.
No, Kit, in the UK. In your opinion, is the mashup type of music more of a European thing than an American thing? Do you think that's more popular in Europe and the UK than America?
Yeah, it's interesting that you guys bring that up, because that podcast I listened to, that was a British podcast.
Ah, okay.
And
there you go.
Yeah, and I think a number of those DJs that he played that did these, and I think Freelance Hellraiser was one that he played. They were all British, almost all British. I have to say, I really, have a lot of respect for the, Danger Mouse was another one that was huge. Yeah. I mean, they really, that takes some skill. I mean, and there were some bad mashups that, when it really exploded, then a lot of people did mashups.
Yes.
And not all of them work, that's for sure. But when they're done right, they can be very creative. I mean, that is hard. What I mean, that is really, you have to really know music, understand beats, understand what goes together. I have a lot of respect for people who can do that. I really do. Mm.
Right. So, like I was saying, this was, I mean, the collaboration between Paul and Freelance pretty much started with Paul's summer 2004 European tour. He did like a 25-minute set consisting of remixed McCartney tracks. And then Paul had said after that that he was getting, you know, people talking about, people asking about these remixes. And then that's when it was discovered that he was going to do this album with Freelance that took place at Hog Hill. It came out in June of 2005. Like I said, it did not chart. I should also mention that Freelance Hellraiser's real name is Roy Kerr, I believe it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There was a single released a week before the album's release of, and this was the single "Really Love You." It was, I think, it was a one-sided 12-inch because you had the two. So you had "Really Love You" and "La Lula," I think, is that's how you pronounce it.
On, yeah, I think so.
Sorry. Yeah, on side one, and then the side two was just an etching of "Really Love You," and those are available on eBay. I've seen a few copies of those, and I plan on getting one soon.
Mm-hmm. Of course cool. You are.
Yeah, of course.
Gotta have it.
Yep.
Anyways, Kit, do you remember how the first time you you found this and heard the actual album itself?
Yes, I do, and I have to give shout-outs to two people we know who were responsible for have given letting me listen to this album. Tom Frangione and Al Sussman. Because at the time, because as you said, it was a British release, not easy to get, but,
no.
But Tom Frangione got it. Yeah. I'm sure will come as a surprise to no one. He was able to get it, and he burned a copy for Al. And so I said to Al, could I please have a copy of this? You know, please. And so he burned a copy for me. I mean, okay. You know, that's how hard it was to get, you know,
yes.
At that time. I mean, it really was. So, so kudos to both of them. Thank you again, guys, for giving, letting me have a copy. I loved it from day one. I mean, as soon as "Really Love You" came on, I was just like, this is gonna be epic. I was better than I expected. I just loved it instantly. But I also thought, some fans are not going to like this.
No, I mean, because I mean, again, it is a mashup. I mean, it is kind of like an electric dance album. I'm sure there was a lot of older fans, you know, that probably, you know, wouldn't cared for it. I mean, did you hear from Al? Did Al say he liked the?
I think he liked it. I think he recognized that, you know, it was a one-off thing. And it was for a particular environment. You know, I mean, it wasn't sacrilegious or anything.
No, and it's a one-off thing. It was a one-off project. It was not meant to be. I mean, we wouldn't call it canon. I don't think we call it canon at all. So,
no.
You know, if you just listen to it on those terms and accept it on those terms, then most people, I'm sure, would have no problem with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought it was a real, I mean, we'll get into it in a second, but I thought it was a really fun experiment and kind of a fresh way to listen to his music. I mean, I thought, you know, lighten up.
Lighten up. And again, Paul has been no stranger to doing this kind of experimental stuff.
Right.
I mean, it was only about four or 5 years prior with the Liverpool Sound College, which came out in 2000 or 2001.
I think,
2001 when that came out, the mashup and Free Now and taking elements of Beatles recordings and mashing up them into a thing. You know, so I'm just going to pull a Tom Hunyadi here and pull it.
Yeah, there you go. There it is.
There you are.
But so it would be it should be no surprise to any fan of Paul that an experimental album of mashup stuff of his own stuff comes out. I mean, especially after like something like this.
Plus, he was doing remixes, you know, prior to that, too, on singles.
Right.
In the 80s and 90s as well.
Right. So, yep. You know, it was a good, you know, and finally he actually just tackled an album worth of his own material. So, you know, right, a double, too. No, right.
Yeah, that's why I was going to point out, Tom, that, in fact, I think years ago I did an article on that in Beatle Fan that, yeah, Paul has done dance remixes for,
right,
for years. I mean, he clearly loves, you know, he likes to dance, you know, he talks about it. He's talked about it many times. I don't know how good he is at it, but he loves to dance. I mean, and he's done many, he's had many top DJs, you know, Joey Dean Benitez and many others remix his songs since the 80s. And
Deliverance.
Everybody's remixed a lot of his stuff, and
the Steve Anderson remixes on Deliverance, right there.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you know, yeah, it, precisely. So I mean, this wasn't a stretch. For him to do that.
No, and I tell you what, to your point earlier, Kit, and Tom mentioned it too. It was in response because of this music was played before a Paul McCartney concert. So, and not all the ones that were played. And I've seen Paul, I don't know, 10 or 11 times. When you go to see his show, this is what you hear. Not necessarily what made it onto these final out, but I mean,
right,
there's mashups of Goodnight Tonight out there with a little luck. And to me, when I play this record, it feels like I'm getting ready to go see a Paul McCartney concert. That's what,
yep.
That's what it is.
And that's, you know, it's meant to, particularly some of these tracks we'll talk about, they're meant to create kind of a mood. Mm. You know, I mean, you can tell. I mean, they're either, you know, to get people ready for the show, or some of them are even a little more on the mellow side. I mean, they're a little bit more like Deep House, where it's meant to create, you know, a little mellower mood. I mean, you know, it's meant for a purpose, and and it's you know, meant to be an experience.
Right.
More than just, you know, sitting and listening to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Andy, do you remember when you first discovered Twin Freaks?
Yeah. Similarly, probably through the same ways as Kit did, through Beatle Fan and obviously online by that point in time. But can't say that I, as somebody who, you know, is in the New York City area, I had my chances to buy it on vinyl with imports. Right. But, I mean, as a struggling poor college kid back then, I couldn't afford it back then. And it's actually one of the lone things that's not in my collection, which Tom now has, and he'll show us in a little bit, because he just got a copy himself.
I want to see it, which he's
going to open up on our show.
Well, you know what? Well,
oh, you're not now? You're not? You're backing out? Oh.
No. I kind of opened it earlier today because I wanted to see, prior to doing the show, I wanted to see if there was any credits or any other information inside. You know, for research purposes, right?
Yes, yeah. But so I was made aware of it and wanted to try to find a way to hear it. And honestly, other than maybe a couple of hearing it and through some other ways on the internet, didn't really hear it properly from start to finish until the album was made available on streaming services, which a couple of years ago. So knew about it, and I've heard really the single which you mentioned, I think, which was Really Love You. I'd heard that,
right?
Liked it, and again, a project like this, something that, you know, we're not going to listen to this album once a week. It's not going to be in our regular rotation of McCartney albums, I don't think. But you know, but I was curious, you know, to finally hear it, listen to it all the way through a couple of years ago for the first time, and thoroughly enjoyed it for what it is, and on that, on those grounds alone.
Right. So let's hear. So we all know now that this was a painting by Paul. It's in his paintings book. You know. So it's nothing new or whatever. It has been out there before, which I kind of like this. It looks pretty cool. This is a gatefold.
Yeah.
So when you open the gatefold, you got the same faces on each side of the gatefold. The album is 53 minutes long, so it does make sense that it is on a double vinyl. And so therefore, you got three tracks per side, you know, equaling 12 tracks for the album whole. So, but yeah, and then you just got a whole black cover with the back in there. The vinyl looks really
Tom,
cool.
Real quick, now, that came from the UK. So that was UK albums are not usually sealed, right? That album was not sealed in shrink wrap?
It was in shrink wrap, yes.
It was?
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. And it's got nice liners in there, so you got your, not your regular paper liners in there. So
right, so the good ones.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
And that was that was an eBay acquisition.
It was this was an eBay purchase, absolutely. And I've just been having a lot of luck on eBay recently, so just might as well just keep keep tossing that dice until the luck runs out.
Yeah.
But no, it's great. It looks great. The vinyl's heavyweight vinyl. For even back then, 2005. I mean, you weren't. I don't know if a lot of them were releasing. You know, have 180 gram vinyl at that time.
Yeah,
Chaos. I'm trying to think. Is that Chaos came around the same time as this? And
right.
That was just a standard vinyl. It was not the 180 gram that is standard
right.
now.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. So yeah, I mean, the vinyl looks nice, but yeah, I mean, it is odd that there wasn't a CD release for this, because, you know, if you're appealing to younger people, I mean, whether at the time they were listening, people are still listening to CDs, you know, streaming is more popular nowadays than stealing, when people were probably downloading and you know, the music back then.
Or burning CDs.
Burning CDs, yeah. Burning CDs. Exactly.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. What is this burning?
What is this burning you speak of?
Right. So it is odd that it wasn't on CD, because CD was still pretty popular back then. Okay, so let's go just run down these tracks here and talk about a few things, because the cool thing about these mashups is they also add bits and pieces of other songs as well,
yes.
Just like, you know, the Love album did. A year later, which was a great discovery, just listening to that album and trying to figure, okay, what was that? Was that like 2 seconds of I Want You, or, you know,
yep.
But starting off with the single Really Love You, this one was really funky. I just love they really brought up the bass line in this one, and I like how the vocals are kind of like a little echoey on the vocals, but I dig this one. Not necessarily my favorite, but it works for what it is. I mean, and plus, like I said, that last minute or so, just really cool, really funky. The bass stands out. And what did you think, Kit?
Oh, man. I mean, this is a banger. It really is. Sorry.
No, that's great.
There. But it is. It's a banger. What can I tell you? I mean, that bass lick. Is just, you know, and that's one of the things I love about this. Yeah, I mean, this whole album that, you know, that Freelance Hellraiser will do that, like it'll be a bass lick, or he'll take a snippet from, you know, of like just a line from a song drum lick or something,
right?
And then build the whole song around that. It's just fascinating, and this is a great example of that. Also, I think this track also features drums from What's That You're Doing.
What's That You're Doing?
Yeah,
and we'll be talking about that in a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. We'll be talking about that song later. And that's of course the other fun thing about this album is, you know, listening through headphones, and what's that? What's that
exactly.
from? What's
exactly?
Sometimes it's hard to tell.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, because I'm listening to it, and then I'm pausing it, and then I'm going to other songs. Is it this or is it this?
I mean, it's a puzzle. It's really a puzzle, but that's fun.
It is. It's an audio puzzle.
Exactly, yeah. but this is one of my favorite tracks from the album. I mean, it just makes you want to dance. I mean, what can I tell you? I mean, it's just adds a whole new element,
right?
Well,
we were talking about earlier, Kit. You know, you get your glow stick, you draw some acid, you put that on, you're all set for the night.
Exactly. I almost, you know, as I said, I was trying to find a glow stick to bring on the show today, and couldn't find it. You know, so but this is a get out your glow stick kind of song. Absolutely,
exactly.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
Andy.
I like this version better than the actual Really Love You on Flaming
right.
Pie.
I
can dig this a hell of a lot more than I can with that.
Right.
It's not my, out of the 12 tracks on Twin Freaks, it's probably at the bottom for me. But it does kick off the album. I mean, I like it. It's got a whole bunch of, again, the bass that just starts and repeats and repeats and repeats. Mm. It's okay, but I mean, there are other. I have about four or five highlighted here that I just think are off the charts, all time great remixes. I like it, but it's I don't love it.
I think it definitely does set the tone for the record. You know, it really tells you what the record's going to be. You know what I mean? So I think it does a good job as an opener. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely other highlights on here that I think are maybe a little bit better. Let's move on to song two, and that's Long Hair Lady, reprise. And, you know, again, you know, you're listening to the song and it says Long Hair Lady, but then you hear the guitar.
Yeah.
You're getting Ooh-You. Yeah. It's like, okay, like, this is cool. Yeah.
Right. You know,
but it works. There's a mashup. Right, it works.
It works.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're listening to it, and you're like, what the hell is this? And then you're going back to the song credits. Is it Ooh-You or is it Long Hair Lady? But then as you listen, you hear the reprise part of the Long Hair Lady, which is Sing Your Song, Love Is Long. And I really like that part of the song a lot. So I'm really cool that they just focused on that part of the song here. Kit?
Yep, I completely agree. I like that. Yeah, that's to my favorite part of the song, so I like that he just lifted that part. And yeah, I think that riff from Ooh-You really works. And it you know, has this, you know, I was talking about Deep House earlier, and I've actually, this doesn't sound like it relates, but it does. I've been listening to a little bit of South African house, which is definitely more of a, it's exactly what I'm talking about with this song. It's to create a mood, you know, it's to create a mood, and it's a little more mellow and you know, a little more, you know, and this Long-Haired Lady to me is a great example of that. That it's, you know, percussion, you know, this is very percussive. And it is meant to sort of, I don't know, it's just meant to, for you to sit back and just enjoy the song. And I mean, definitely for you to, you know, before the concert, to just sit back and, you know, take this in, you know.
Get ready. It's setting a scene. It's what a lot of this music is doing.
Right. Exactly. And it's the same, you know, with I've heard with South African house, you know, it's just you're in an environment, you know, you're in a club where you're just not necessarily getting up and dancing, but just sitting and you know, taking in the environment, sitting back with your drink and you know, take it, like that kind of thing. And this is a good example of that. And it's done really well, I think. And then having that refrain, you know, going through those vocals, very cool. I really like the effect that it creates.
Cool.
Agreed. I like that long-haired lady was chosen because from Ram. So, I mean, there's always plenty of love for Ram, and such a very Hey Jude-esque, you know, song with that refrain that goes on and on and on. And again, a lot of this music is all very percussive anyway, you know, right from the beginning, right from the get-go. It's the percussion is what's going to stand out with a lot of these tracks. I mean, it's the first thing that I go to. This is going to be rhythm. This is going to be very rhythm-heavy and rhythm-based.
Yeah. Right.
No matter what the song is, it worked out well. I love the refrain of Long Haired Lady. I think it works with Ooh-You. This is a standout track for sure.
Right. All right. Number three, we go to the longest track on Driving Rain, which is probably the longest song in Paul's catalog, to one of the shortest songs on the album, which is Rinse the Raindrops, which sounds very sped up to me musically. It sounds a lot like what Edward O'Brien did with what's the song from McCartney 3? Imagine, Slidin'.
It
sounds a lot like that, because it just sounds like the music is sped up a little bit, but the vocals are the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, no, I know what you're saying.
It doesn't feel like the vocals are sped up at all. It just feels like the music is, which is fine. Right. I mean, I've always enjoyed this song. I'm glad that it's included here. But, you know, I kind of wish there was something else, a little bit more stuff was added to this.
To this one.
You know? But, yeah. But, Andy, what do you think?
It's okay. I really love you. I think I like this version better than the version on Driving Rain because it's shorter. Right. It's shorter. I mean, I like that it's a little faster, but the vocals are still maintained at that same speed right. as they are on the record.
Right.
In this context, I actually listened to this more than I ever would the one on Driving Rain, which was going to be a half hour anyway.
Right. That's funny. Kit?
Yes. Thank you, Andy. That's exactly what I thought. Same thing. I like this version way better than the one on Driving Rain. I like that it's faster. And I agree that I like that the vocals weren't sped up too, because that is one thing that irritates me sometimes with mashups. I don't like it when the vocals are sped up so they sound like chipmunks or right. something, or slowed right. down. You know, right. I give the DJ way more points if
right.
you know, he or she doesn't do that. And so yeah, that sounds great. But yeah, I love the sped up. I mean, it has a more like chaotic kind of quality to it, and you know, very psychedelic kind of sound, right. and I just thought, man, if more tracks were like this on Driving Rain, I'd like it better.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, Tom.
Fair enough. No, that's fine. It's fine. One of the moving on to the track four. One of the disappointments for me is not the disappointment, but the three tracks are from McCartney 2 are included in this. Which makes all the sense in the world.
Sure. Yeah,
to me, absolutely. Those three tracks are included on here. However, I think they missed an opportunity with the first two that are on here, starting with Dark Room. And, you know, I think it's just pretty bare bones. I don't really think there's really much to it. Obviously, you get the good parts, you know, they got a place, you know, on there. But, I mean, it just doesn't really, you know, chime with me that much. But it's still fine. But I still prefer the McCartney 2 version over this. So get.
Yeah, this one is one of my favorites. I mean, it's, as you said, it's fine. I mean, and right. it's a deep house kind of track where it's again to create a mood. You know?
Right.
But you bring up a good point that a lot of McCartney 2 tracks would have are natural.
Right.
I mean, they really are. In this one, I do like how they kind of kept the 80s sort of vibe to Dark Room on this remix.
Right.
I mean, I'm glad they didn't tinker with that too much. And they enhanced the percussion for sure on this, which is good. But yeah, I kind of agree. I think that Freelance Hellraiser could have gone a little further with this.
Right.
It would have been interesting. But I mean, it creates a mood, and that's fine.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I kind of agree. I think this one could have been
right.
a little. You could have gone a little further.
Right. Yeah, you could. I mean, because the song is kind of creepy to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, the original. This kind of feels a little creepy too, still. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you had a little bit more fun with this one, I think.
Yeah.
Andy?
I absolutely think this is one of the best ones on the album. I love this version of Dark Room. I think this is great. Why? Because immediately my ears went to it, but listening to it again a few weeks, getting ready for the show, is the clarity in the vocal. It's much more clear.
That's
on the original McCartney 2,
right.
It's very his vocals are very dampened down and heavy, right? Here,
right.
You know, I got a place we can go in my very clear and bright. And I love that. I love that aspect of this version of Dark Room. Just that I can hear him singing it more clearer. Yeah, it's a little freaky, but I like that his vocals are so clear. And brought up in this mix. Love it.
That's
love
a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
Cool. Excellent. All right. Track five, Live and Let Die. Now, I'm not going to lie. This is probably the biggest disappointment for me on this album. And I'll tell you why. Because I just... When it comes to vocals, all they focus on is when you were young, and it's just over and over and over and over, and it just continues, because just when you think maybe he might continue it, he doesn't, you know, and it's pretty much just, and then you get, you know, an adult talking about having a dream that the Beatles would come over to his home or something, and then you got the little girl talking about how, you know, Paul McCartney wants to be your best friend or something like that. But again, it's not bad, but I think this is my least favorite on the album. Andy?
I'm kind of with you, partner. Look, sounds like it's always getting ready to go to the next part of the
song. Exactly.
and it just never does.
It's like it skips like right there. Like there's a problem with the record, and it keeps skipping it when you were when you were young. When you were young,
I obviously this is still going with the whole vibe of the record, but it does get a little repetitive on this one, just a little bit. But I do like the bits of dialogue dropped in and out of it. That's probably the best part about it for me.
Right, because it's part of kind of it's just like Liverpool Oratorio. I'm sorry, not the Liverpool Soundcage. Because there's a lot of that talking, you know, over the remixes on that too.
Right, I could take or leave this one.
Right. Yeah, this I appreciate it from an experimental kind of level, and I mean it is so deconstructed. I mean it is really deconstructed. I mean just you know, hanging the whole song on that one line. Yeah, I mean
that's it.
Talking about
when you were young.
You were young. But then mixing the other dialogue in there, you know, kind of clever, I think. I mean, you know, I agree it can get a little repetitive. I understand what you're saying there. You know, he does keep the certain guitar lines and piano in there, but then, you know, adds the different elements. So I appreciate it on, as I said, on an experimental artistic level, but does it make for enjoyable listening?
Not so much.
I don't know.
Subjective. You know. It's all subjective, but I think we're all in agreement there with this one for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Track six, the end of side... or the end of the first record here, we're going with Temporary Secretary. And again, this is another fun one, I think. I like how it doesn't start with the techno stuff like it normally does on McCartney 2. Like, this one actually starts with the acoustics, which I kind of dig that for a change. You know, it's kind of nice
the open
hearing.
Guitar, the...
Right, instead of the electronics over that, or the synth, or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, I enjoy this one quite a bit as well. Kit?
Banger to the nth degree. I love this.
Right.
And in fact, this made me appreciate the original a hundred times more. I mean, I just love this. I mean, this is, this is a glow stick.
Right.
Song.
It's a glow stick song, kid.
I wonder if it's just because of the do 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 do. I think that, I don't know if that's what turns people off on that song.
Yeah, maybe. You know?
Probably.
Yeah, maybe it is. But I mean, the beat on this. I mean, the beat just slams.
Right.
The you know, Paul's vocals on this. I mean, you know, they really bring out the vocals.
They do. They really do, but interesting, before I was just saying about Darkroom, how I liked how it was so much brought up. This one, they drenched his vocals in echo on this one.
Yeah, but it works.
But it works.
You know, but it really works. I mean, it just makes it sound, I don't know, somehow bigger. I mean, the whole production just sounds so much bigger than the original. And I'm not saying that the original, you know, is worse or anything like that. I mean, it's a different feel. I mean, this is the club. I mean, this is a rave. I've never been to a rave, but I'm assuming this is what it's like. And I mean, you know, I just figure like this is what a rave sounds like. And I mean, I just love the you know, when it goes into this part where that it goes like, you know, that I mean, it just takes these twists and turns. I can't say enough. This might be my favorite track of the whole album.
Really?
I just think he took Freelance Hellraiser took this song to a whole other level. I just think, you know, it's a lot of fun. And as I said, it made me reconsider Temporary Secretary. And now, I mean, it really did. It made me appreciate the original a lot
more. That's cool. That's very cool.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. We should also add that this album does take a lot of more deeper tracks or deeper cuts from his catalog. Except they're, I mean, obviously not coming up, or maybe I'm amazed, but I mean, the bulk of these songs are what you would consider the deeper cuts. But Andy?
Agree with both of your points on this. I'll also say, too, this track has the distinction on this album, too, of having actually most of the lyrics in it, too. Most of the lyrics. A lot of the songs that like we just talked about, Live and Let Die, you just heard the one line. This one has a good chunk, if not, I mean, doesn't have all the lyrics, but I mean, it goes into the bridge, you know, of the song, the lyrics and stuff. So, so from that standpoint, I like it because it's got actually a lot of the original lyrics also throughout the thing. And I just love the echo drenching of his vocals on this throughout the whole thing. And I probably like this better than the original as well. But you can see that this is the song that like lit the fire and the spark for this project. Paul playing it live again, where it became a big house number again. They were playing it in the clubs. I mean, this is the track that this project was probably destined for to really shine on. And I could see why Kit, you know, it's your favorite track on the album, because this is the song for which this whole project really could have been the brainchild for. It really could have been.
Right.
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. All right. Popping on the second LP here, and we're starting with, you know, What's That You're Doing, which obviously we well-known track on Tug of War. Duet with Stevie Wonder. This is a co-write between Paul and Stevie. This one, you know, I'll just come out and say I prefer this over the Tug of War version. I just really dig this version. I love the how up the bass line is on this track. You know, and then like to what Andy said with Temporary Secretary, you get most of the lyrics on this track as well here. So I mean, this one is a big favorite of mine on this album. Andy?
Same. I probably like it. I like the original a lot, and I like this probably just as much. The lyrics. Stevie's great vocal is still retained. It didn't change too much of it up. Just another kind of addicting, hypnotic. That's a good word to describe this music on this album, is that it's hypnotic. Very hypnotic, trance-like. And whether it's a bass riff or something that's lyric that's repeated over and over again, like when you were young, it's all hypnotic. It's all hypnotic and trance-like in some way. No matter what song you're listening to, I think that's the same way with this song as well. Right from the beginning, with that little bass hook, you know, right from the beginning, just get you right going into it. And I like it probably as good as the original.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. Kit?
Yeah, I agree, Andy. I like both equally. You know, I do love the original. This one, you know, it's a little faster. But that bass, that bass rip, wow. I mean, that just adds an even funkier. I mean, it was already a, you know, funky song, but that bass riff definitely adds an even funkier element to it. This is another song where they pretty much, you know, they didn't just take the one line and build it. I mean, they included
most of the lyrics.
And I think that was the right decision. I mean, there's why tinker with those? I mean, it was just a fun jam, they should have kept it. I mean, there, of course, there are, like, they put the vocals, Freelance Hellraiser put some of the vocals through some filters and that kind of thing. Right. But it was fun. I mean, it didn't detract from the song at all. It just made it, a little, it just made it danceable. You know, the whole song made it more danceable I enjoyed it. But yeah, I like it just as much as the original. I wouldn't say in my opinion, it's not better, but it's definitely just as good.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. Awesome. Track 8, Oh Woman Oh Why.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
this one's juicy because it really just adds so much. Oh, so much, it's really interesting because adding so much to this. We can start with Andy on this.
This is my favorite one on the entire record. I absolutely love this version of Oh Woman Oh Why. There is so much in this.
Right.
The opening strands of Venus and Mars. Yeah. The news intro of the guy opening the wing
Geraldo Rivera, I thought that was.
No, it's not Geraldo. It's not. It's shown in the Wingspan documentary. It's not. Okay. It's a guy who used to be on Fox 5 New York whose name was escaping me. I tried to look it up, but if you watch the Wingspan documentary, they show the little snippet of the guy announcing this, you know, McCartney at 8:25 takes the stage. Right. So you're hearing that in this remix. You're hearing, you know, it then goes into like a little bit of loop from Red Rose Speedway.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
A little riff of Band on the Run.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
And then, of course, the lyrics of Oh Woman, Oh Why. So all that mashed together makes for an incredible, incredible track that I could never, ever get tired of listening to. It is phenomenal. I love it.
Yeah, this one really took the... I mean, I was really surprised on how much I really liked hearing all these little snippets into this one track. Because, I mean, you know, you're listening to this and you're going, wait a minute, was that what I thought it was? And you're like, yeah, it was. You know, so great moments in there. And, yeah, I really dig this one a lot. Yeah, too. I mean, I really love... You know, with the riff from Band on the Run, I thought was great. You know, and that awesome introduction with Venus and Mars just really is killer. You know, the live version, that is, anyways. But, Kit...
Yeah, this is how you do a mashup. I mean, this is how you do it right. You know, you put together all of these seemingly disparate elements and make it work. And I love that, you know, creating, you know, he's recreating the excitement that goes into, you know, the start of a show.
It's incredible.
Yep. And I mean, even just sitting listening to it now, you're just like, you can almost feel like,
because it's on.
It's a show. Come on.
It's on. I'm listening to it right now as we record. I have it on. I am.
You know,
that's funny.
It's great. I mean, it just really sets the mood perfectly. And also, as you said, it's just fun to listen to. Yeah, as you said, you're like, oh, there's the, you know, here's the guitar riff from Band on the Run. Oh, there's the, you know, there's a bit of loop. There's a bit of, you know, I mean, it's just so cleverly done. And as we've been talking about so much throughout this episode, it sets the scene. I mean, it sets a mood, and it does it so well. So absolutely, this was very, very well done.
Yeah, definitely, definitely one of the big highlights for me on this album.
No
for
question.
Sure. Yeah. Track 9, now we get back to kind of, I think, a little bit of a downer for me, although I do appreciate the bits that are added in here, and that's Mumbo, which, you know, maybe is it's fine. I do like the woos that are left in, you know, part of the, you know, with that from the original track. But again, this is just like a little middle of the road for me. I don't think there's a lot of flashiness to this, which is unfortunate because I think they kind of dropped the ball on this one. But again, it's just middle of the road for me. Andy?
Same, partner. This one doesn't do a whole lot for me. A little too repetitive. Goes on for a little too long at 5 minutes and 28 seconds. They could have thrown a few more seconds of other music in there. I thought to maybe kind of freshen it up a little bit. This one's a little too repetitive for my taste.
Okay. Kit?
You read my mind, Andy. I said in my notes, a bit repetitive and goes on too long. That's exactly what I said in my notes. Yeah. This probably may be my least favorite track on the album.
Well, Mumbo just can't find no love no matter where it is, can it?
Except when it was done live on that live.
Right. Okay, fair enough. Right.
Yep.
Sorry, Kit, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, that's it. I mean, it's just, it's another track where you think, you know, he could have gone farther, you know, he could have gone, you know, done some more, you know, added some more elements.
Okay.
Least favorite.
All right. Well, then we go to track 10, which is the only really new track title on this, in Lalula, which talking about taking liberties and stretching something. I mean, this one might have the most of different bits and pieces from other McCartney songs. You hear Old Siam, Sir. You hear Old Woman, Oh Why. You hear Mama Miss America. And I think... I want to say the orchestration bit is from the end of 1985. I'm not 100% sure, but that's what it sounds like to
me. It does. Yeah. You know.
Could
but
be.
Andy? Yeah. Andy?
I agree. I was trying to put my finger on that orchestration as well, too, partner. And
I thought
1985 as well, but I wasn't too sure.
Right.
Again, the only title that was kind of brand new. Nothing, but this one didn't really jump out at me as much as some of the other tracks on the album. I heard Old Siam, Sir. But this one didn't grab me as much as one of the other tracks.
Right, and it's just weird because there was like no real one song to focus on. You know, you just focus on so much. So I think that maybe might be the issue with that track is. But Kit,
what song is it? When we were listening to Temporary Secretary, we're listening to Temporary Secretary with a mashup,
right.
Or we're listening to Dark Room, or it's What's That You're Doing? You know, it's that song. This one, I guess, well, it's its own song because we didn't really know it prior. But yeah, I just think it just suffers a little bit from that. That's all.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think you're both right. Because I mean, it was fine. It's a danceable. Again, kind of a danceable sort of song, kind of funky bass line, the riff, the riff, as we said, from Old Siam Sir, guitars from A Woman of Why. But other than that, I mean, it just wasn't very distinctive to me. It just didn't really, I didn't find anything particularly catchy about it or as I said, distinctive. But I mean, I didn't hate it or anything. I mean, it was fine.
Good word there, Kit. It wasn't distinctive enough. Good word.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It just didn't really, if you were sitting and listening to it, before the show, it's background, kind of background music. It was fine, but just not as it just didn't have enough punch. For me to really grab my attention fully. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate all those tracks being in there.
Yeah.
But it just didn't really feel focused enough. So, track 11, really cool. I love how this opens up. But it's coming up. And it starts off with More Smooth Than the Grey Goose, which I just think is just so crazy. But again, it works because More Smooth Than the Grey Goose is so experimental to begin with. When you mix it up with another track that's really experimental coming up. And I think this is a really good mashup, and I think it worked. Kit?
Yeah, I thought this was brilliant. I really did. I mean, this was, you just thought, how can these two work together? But they do. I mean, again, this is what a mashup is all about. I mean, it really, a good mashup. These, two songs that should never work, and yet they do.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have ever thought, coming up in More Smooth Than Grey Goose.
How do those two work?
But it does amazingly well. Mm-hmm. There's some great, funky wah-wah guitar elements.
Right.
Got a little bit of a harder beat, a funky bass, to it. I mean, it just, it takes coming up to another place. It really does. And I just, this was such a great surprise on this album. And again, it just shows you, what mashups can do and why I really enjoy them when they're done right. Because, they can really, they can just bring out such fun elements in music and show how disparate elements can work together. When the DJ knows what he or she is doing. Exhibit A.
Yeah. Andy, we've talked about, London Town. We talked about More Smooth Than the Grey Goose being a favorite of ours. I'm sure... you hearing that aspect of it too was pretty good for you.
Oh yeah, this again right after "Oh Woman, Oh Why." This is like my second favorite track on the whole album. It just works so well, as Kid pointed out. It's so great. And they've sped up. They sped up. The coming up part was sped up, right? Because More Smooth was really fast, so they just But it just works. I mean, you would find two songs that work together. You've got the piano riff of More Smooth running out throughout the whole thing. And then you want to love until and you're like, oh my God, this is great.
And that's kind of a song, and coming up is kind of a song where you can't get away with speeding up the vocals just a touch, because his vocals are already kind of, distracted to begin with. I mean, it's already been manipulated in a way, the way they mixed his vocals on there.
On the original coming up.
Yeah, on the original,
So speeding it up even a hair for this. It doesn't really matter that much. So it works out. It works so well. with this version of Coming Up. Now, you mentioned before, I could have sworn I heard shades of 1985 in this song, too, with the horns.
Oh, know, yeah. Mm.
Right? You know, the, right. You know, you hear the... Duh,
right, duh, exactly. Duh, duh. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
I don't know if that's 1985 or no. I thought, oh, maybe that's a little of that as well, but I don't really know.
Right, because you do get horns, and you know, at the end of 1985. Yeah, and I noticed that too, and then I just couldn't put my finger on it. And I think you might be right, partner.
Yeah,
just give it another listen and let me know what you think. To me, that sounded like the end of 1985 thrown in there a little bit too. But also works with Morse Moose and the Grey Goose.
Brilliant.
Yeah, just the good stuff. On this one, yeah, this is definitely a big highlight for me on this one. And Kit, you did meant to talk about this one, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Then we close the album with Maybe I'm Amazed, which you just don't hear that familiar opening piano riff like you're used to. It's just so weird hearing something different, you know, opening Maybe I'm Amazed. But then you do get like some of that heavy, you know, very brief moments of that heavy breathing from Karina Kaur, which people know that I really dig that song, you know. But you really don't catch it unless you're listening to it with headphones.
True.
Yes.
So it's just a really quick, you know, in there. If you're not paying attention, you might miss it. But this was a fine one. I think this is the longest track on the album at 6:12. Maybe it could have been brought down a little bit longer, but I mean, I'm sorry, a little bit shorter. But it's interesting, still the same. You know, it's not bad. I dig this one, Kit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite off the album, but yeah, I think it's again. Interesting, you know, experiment. As you said, it's obviously sped up, stronger percussion, more prominent bass. I thought it was interesting how he, you know, the vocals, I mean, he moved the vocals around, you know, different lines. Interesting how you brought up the breathing, because, interesting how he used that almost as a little percussion, as another percussive. And yeah, you have to wear headphones to fully appreciate that.
Right.
I repeating that phrase, maybe I'm amazed at the way you love me all the time, you know, building it around that. I thought it did go on a bit too long. As you were mentioning, it's like 6:12.
6:12, yeah.
Yeah, that was a little long. Although, you have to keep in mind, this is a different, you know,
different kind of album.
And you know, this was being played before the show. You know, so I mean, it's you know, wasn't meant exactly for us to just be sitting there and listening to it. It's not my favorite, but again, I find it interesting. I mean, for you know, again, it's deconstructing.
If I remember correctly, the O's at towards the end, they bring it in almost like to be like backing vocals for when he's singing, you know, Maybe I'm Amazed, you know. So I mean that's also very interesting as well.
Yeah,
you know, how they manipulate the vocals, you know, part of the vocal to make it like a backing vocal, you know, rather than just you know, a continuation of the vocals like on the album of the song proper.
Yeah, so I mean, it really shows me he was very creative. I mean, I appreciate it on that level, it's just not my favorite off the album, but I appreciate it on a creative level for sure.
Right. Gotcha. Andy?
Spot on, Kit. To me, with this track, even though it's a little bit longer, it builds itself up to something bigger. You know, it starts out with the basic piano, and it kind of builds to a big, big, big finish with all the elements of the song kind of over and over again. Not my favorite, I think, either of us. I think we're all in agreement there. But it works for what this album is. But again, to your point, this is meant to build something up and, you know, get people excited about a concert. And, you know, for what it is, I think it's okay, but it's not, would not be one I revisit a whole lot on its own.
Right. Cool. Yeah. And that's the record. So, I mean, I definitely recommend people out there, if you haven't listened to it yet, give it a try. You know,
it's streaming. You can get it on streaming. It's on Spotify. Yeah. It's on Apple Music.
And YouTube. Go to YouTube if you want to listen to it. There, you know, it's that. I mean, that's how I listened to it, was on YouTube, you know, because I didn't know, I haven't played the record yet. So, but I hadn't listened to it in a long time. My cousin David, you know, sent me, you know, burned me a copy, and I, you know, listened to it that way as well, like you did, Kit, you know. So, but I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, what's your final thoughts on this, Kit? I mean, is obviously, I do think, you know, McCartney fans should at least give this a try.
I absolutely think so. I mean, you know, just don't go into it expecting that this is a typical McCartney album. This was a one-off project, but I think in many ways it makes you appreciate his music even more. I mean, it will make you listen to his music in a different way. Also a lot of fun to, as we've been doing, you know, throughout this, like, hey, I think that, you know, that orchestration may have been from 1985. Right. Hey, weren't those drums? Yeah. I mean, that's great fun in itself. But mainly it's, you know, as I said, like with Temporary Secretary, this version made me appreciate the original in a whole new way. So if you go into it like that, I think you will really, really enjoy this.
Cool. Andy?
Agreed. It's always nice to kind of revisit things that, you know, come out and then you forget about it and listen to it again. In a project like this, again, it screams to me that I'm getting ready to go see Paul McCartney. Everyone gets that. It's like, okay, we're waiting for him to come out. And on that, if you've never been to Paul McCartney concerts and you haven't heard this music, you're going to know exactly what we've all talked about in this episode, because that's what it's everything that Kit has said and Thomas said. It's building something and creating an atmosphere anticipation and excitement, and some songs do better than others, as we've highlighted. I think pretty much for the par, I think all three of us really agree on what works and what doesn't work, which is cool.
For this record,
my only wish is that it got a little bit more of a widespread release at the time, CD.
I agree,
and a reissue, because it really it should be made again physically, at least a CD as well.
Yes.
Right. And like you said, to your point earlier, Andy, you know, this was kind of a continuation of what he would do before his shows. You know, I mean, if you dig those mashups that you hear before his live concerts, then you'll probably like this.
Very
absolutely.
Very much so. Hopefully, I mean, you know, good on you for scoring a version of it on vinyl. That's a score.
Right. It's definitely cool. Very, very glad to have this. Now I just need to find Driving Rain on vinyl.
That's a tough one.
That's going to be a tough game.
I'd reach for it, but it's in the other room, Tom, so I can't pull it.
Yeah, that's fine. Yes. Here you go, right here. Right, having that.
I'd reach for it, but it's over there on the shelf, but it's there.
Fair enough.
It from me with my shoulder. Don't do that.
Don't do
that.
No, poor Kittner's shoulder.
Anyways, thank you, Kit, for talking with Twin Freaks. Take a few moments to let people know where you're at and what you got coming up and what you're working on.
Okay, well, of course, you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, kidotool.com. You can, of course, find me and Tom at Talk More Talk at talkmoretalk.com on our Facebook page and on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe. We will be coming back with a new episode January 10th. So at 9 p.m. Eastern. So please join us live.
And don't ask what it is, because we still don't know.
Yeah, we still don't know yet. But it'll be awesome. It'll be an awesome topic, we can guarantee you. And I am right now in preparation for my Stevie Wonder course, which I am going to be starting, the class will be starting January 27th, so there is still time to register. The link is on the Talk More Talk Facebook page, as well as mine, so you can go there and register. It's three nights, January 27th, and the next two Thursdays, I think it's like February 3rd and 10th, I think those are the dates. I'm not 100% sure, but they're three Thursdays, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I've got music planned. I've got you know, class discussions. It's really going to be fun. It'll cover his early Motown days through the 70s classic period and, of course, up to today. I'm right. so excited about this. And
Can you just give a little example? How old was he when he signed with Motown? And was that his first contract?
He was 11. When he with Motown, he was 11. Yeah, unbelievably. That was his first contract, and and then he set a record when he renewed. Well, he renewed a couple of times, but he renewed in I think it was 75 for 13 million.
Wow.
That was a record at the time. But I mean, by then, you know, he was well worth it. Yeah, he was well worth it, and would, of course, go on to produce songs in the Key of Life. So I think he earned that money.
Right.
for sure. So so I hope you'll all join me. It's going to be just a great adventure through the music of Stevie Wonder. I'm just so excited to be teaching this course.
Cool. Very cool. And any other shows lined up or anything like that? Any
appearances? Yes. I'm going to be, in fact, shortly after this, I'm going to be recording an episode of When They Was Fab with our good friend Ed Chen. We're going to be doing an episode on Get Back. So as soon as that episode is up, I'll have that up on my Facebook page and everything. Mm. So, and of course, when this episode is up, I will have this set up on my Facebook page and everything. Right. So, so I think that's everything for now. But
cool.
But
very
cool. So, but excellent. But but I'm so glad to be back here. This was such fun.
Yes, thank you as always. Andy, anything you want to add before we sign off?
Not much. Oh, it's just always great to connect and chat with the Queen again. I don't get a chance to do that often.
Yeah.
As a commenter sometimes on on the channel, but then I know Kit sometimes pops in and comments when we go live, and it's just an honor and a pleasure to always chat with you, my friend. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Andy. I appreciate it. Well, I always love being on here, and talking about Twin Freaks was just so fun.
Right.
I love this album from the minute it came out.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. Very much so. Cool. So for Two Legs, you can reach us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Two Legs. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. We have the website, twolegs.com. You can find us at, and please check out our YouTube channel. That's the video aspect of it. That's Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. The YouTube channel has grown a lot over the last year. Actually, 2021 has been our best year ever for the show, whether it was video and audio. So thank you for all the newcomers for checking us out. As Kit said, Talk More Talk will be back on January 10th, and I'm sure we'll have a great topic to start off the new year. That's going to be a lot of fun. So again, to go to the Facebook page, no, I'm sorry, the YouTube channel, Talk More Talk, because now we are doing our live shows on YouTube.
Yes, you got that account verification thing.
Yes,
thank God.
Thank God.
Right.
I don't know why that took so long. Right. I remember helping you the one day, and I'm like, why is this not working?
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was really weird. Yeah. But anyways, I do want to plug one thing. I did appear on our frenemy, if you will, Sam Wiles, his Paul or Nothing spinoff show called Macca in Your Attic. Yeah. I actually hosted the show, so that way Sam had the was able to show his McCartney stuff and tell stories. And that was a lot of fun. That's on YouTube now. You can go to Paul or Nothing YouTube channel and watch myself host and watch Sam show his stuff and tell some great stories. So check that out now. Kit, this was a pleasure. You're always welcomed here. We love you. And I know you're very, you know, you have a lot of fans out there, and you know, you are well-respected in the community, and, you know, it's always a joy talking with you. So for Kit, for Andy, I'm Tom, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night as always. Take care.